This is episode 260 of the Flip Empire Show with Alex Pardo.
Welcome to the Flip Empire Show, bringing you the interviews, strategies, and insights for smart real estate investors. Prepare to dive into the minds of real estate's heavy hitters and gain the cutting-edge expertise you need to scale and grow your real estate empire. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
Hey, how are you today, guys? I'm excited about the masterclass I have with my friend Ryan Robeson. Guys, you know, this particular episode, I think is going to be really interesting for you. It's a little shorter than what we normally do. We go about half an hour, and you know, Ryan's a young guy. Him and I recently met, and we were talking over dinner, and you know, he was kind of sharing with me how he has set up multiple businesses to run without him, which effectively give him and his family, you know, the freedom to travel. This year, he would have traveled 120 days with his family, with his wife and three little kids. And, you know, we talk about how he's been able to set up multiple businesses by identifying talented people, giving them an opportunity and partnering with them, but so that they run the day-to-day operations and he focuses more on strategy, right? And he helps them through capital and et cetera. But it's a really interesting show because, you know, Ryan is somebody who, you know, we talk about semi-passive income. We talk a little bit about his passive income, how that has been a big proponent and why he's been able to have that freedom and flexibility to travel with his family. But most importantly is how he goes about identifying talented people to work with, giving them an opportunity and impacting, you know, just several people. You know, he's the last 10 years or so, you know, he averages over 100 flips a year in multiple markets. And he does that because he focuses on impacting other people, you know, and we even kind of get into that conversation and that word impact comes out a lot. So, you know, without further ado, I want to dive right into this episode with Ryan Robeson. Ryan, what is going on, my man? How you doing?
Love and life today. Today is a good day.
Yeah, buddy. Yeah, man. Well, it's great to have you on, man. I know you and I haven't known each other that long, but you guys know, you know, when you just meet someone and you kind of like just connect with them, you have so many commonalities. And that's kind of what happened with Ryan and I over dinner several months ago in Tampa. You know, we just kind of got to talking. We had connected, I think, once before on Facebook, Ryan. And then, you know, just coming to find out about your family. I know you got three little kids. You know, we're kind of around the same age. And there's just a lot of, you know, I felt connected to you and just a lot that we both kind of enjoy as far as travel and giving, et cetera. So, man, I'm blessed to have you on the show, buddy. It's good to have you.
I'm excited to be here. It's nice to find other people struggling with three little kids and all the struggles that come with that. I know you before the show, you wanted to talk a little bit about struggles in my business. Well, sometimes three little kids adds to some of those struggles.
Oh yeah. It gives you meaning. It gives you like a new why, but it's not all peaches, rainbows, and unicorns. I mean, there's definitely challenges that come with, you know, it's funny. I always say the, you know, your kids are born. It's the biggest like miracle, biggest blessing ever, but they don't come with a manual. You kind of have to just figure it out as you go, right?
At this point, I'm really hoping my third kid's going to be the best. We screwed up on the first one. The second one's doing good, but I really think the third one's going to be the all-star. Like we finally figured it out.
There you go, man. I'm sure you're not giving yourself enough credit there, but awesome, man. Well, hey, listen, I think you recently started a YouTube channel that's got a lot of great content on there. So definitely want to include a link and plug that at the end of the show. But you know, for people that don't know who you are, kind of give us, you know, a summary as to how you got started in the business, and then you can kind of fast forward and give people an idea so they have some context as to what your business looks like today out there in Phoenix.
Yeah, I had an interesting start, and some of this I don't think you've ever heard, Alex. I have an accounting background, and you don't find very many accountants. I know when you're interviewing and doing this test and somebody says they're an accountant, you're probably not thinking that's my next acquisitions guy, right?
Right, right.
And I started in accounting, but I grew up loving sales. Like I had a paper route. I was out there selling magazines door to door as a kid. And both my mom and dad are in real estate. So I had a little bit of that in my blood. And I remember sitting down with my dad right when I graduated high school and said, hey, I want to get into real estate. Let's do this. What do I need to do? What should I study? What, you know, thinking he's going to tell me to study real estate. They had a real estate degree at the college I went to. And he really pushed me towards accounting. And it was a really big, like, check in my life to like, do I really want to go down this route? And it timing worked out perfect. While I was making 45, 50 grand a year as an accountant, all my mm-hmm. friends were making millions of dollars back in 2006 and 2007. And I knew I was smarter than these guys. I mean, it didn't take much to make $1 million in 2006, right?
Right.
And I was so like, I was frustrated a little bit at myself. Like, why did I go this 4 years of accounting and now I'm 2 years into my career in accounting and I'm not making very much money. And they put me in a back room with no window and, you know, working crazy hours and all my buddies are driving boats and Range Rovers. And then I got a job. I had my first break in real estate. I got a job with a hard money lender. And the advice I got, which was really good advice when you're going to get into real estate, is learn how to value property. If you can learn how to value property properly, and one of my mentors told me that, I went and sought some mentors, and you know, I became an underwriter for this hard money lender, and we were just valuing property left and right, and I was getting paid 80 grand a year with a window, and I was so excited to have an office with a window. And right, literally like 2 weeks after I took that job, the market crashed. So we putted along for about 2 years doing that. And I learned a ton watching the market crash. And I'm so glad I had a salary through it, right? I'm so glad all my buddies that went bankrupt during that time, like I'm not glad that happened to them, but I'm glad it didn't happen to me, right? I don't know if my ego may be too big to come back for something like that.
Yeah.
And it kind of long story short, the market crashed so bad that this hard money lender ended up just giving up. And he's like, I can't pay you anymore. And sorry, I love you, but you know, you don't have a job. And, you know, we agreed to kind of go our separate ways and it ended nicely. And I was sitting there, I had $50,000 in the bank. I was always a saver. I mean, as a little kid, I just save. I always had that as part of my life. And I thought I was on top of the world, like 50 grand in my bank. That's a lot of freaking money for a single dude, right?
Sure.
And I traveled a little bit. I worked out every day. And then after about 3 weeks, I just got bored. I was like, I got to do something. And this is right about the time that loan modifications became super popular.
Oh, yeah.
And it was before the short sale days. Mm-hmm. People were kind of starting to get into short sales, but loan mods were first. If you were in the industry, loan mods were the big deal. And a buddy of mine and I got together and was like, hey, let's start a loan mod company. And we got lucky. One of our friends that was successful in it was bringing in $3,000 to $5,000 per client, signing up like 30, 40 people a day. I mean, that's good money, right?
Oh, yeah.
And he had been doing it for 6 months. And luckily, right when we started, we were like our second month in of starting loan mods, we probably had 30 clients at that point. He like got shut down by the attorney general. And honestly, he ended up being okay. But like, it just wasn't the right business model. We can go into details on that later, I guess. But and we switched over to short sales. And it was a great transition for me. I did short sales for 6 to 8 years, lots of outbound calling, lots of what was really good for me is I had to meet with very distressed people that were going through some really hard times losing their house and learn how to handle the emotions of people in distress and work with them. And that is a great transition. If you can learn, if you could be in, you know, that kind of industry, like they say, psychologists are good acquisitions people in our business, right? Because you just learn to work with people, learn to work with their emotions and understand them. And you learn to care.
Not only that, Ryan, but you learn that, you know, you can't approach people that are in distress or even people that are not in distress. It's not a one size fits all. You know, like when you really understand human psychology and you understand somebody's personality, you can kind of tailor your communication style towards that person. You know, you might not communicate the same way to a high D on a DISC profile that you would to like a high S, for example, or somebody that's just, you know, very aggressive. You wouldn't communicate with that person. You'd kind of tailor, you know, the way you take that person through a sales process or even the way that you might interact with that person. You know what I mean?
And I think what's made me successful in acquisitions and when, you know, as I did acquisitions is I'm a chameleon salesperson. And I think that is not that I'm the perfect salesperson by any means, but when I'm hiring, I look for that in people. Like that's an ideal person that can be really excited because there are certain sellers that are, I mean, their life is tough if you could bring some joy, if you can bring some happiness when you show up and you're a happy person, you bring that energy into their house, mm-hmm. that gets them, they like you. That gets, nobody treats them like that. Nobody's giving them excitement. And other people need you to cry with them and give them a hug. And, you know, it's just, that's that chameleon sales that you learn to adapt to what the person needs.
That's right. And I think the more genuine you are about wanting to help that person versus just looking at, you know, these sellers as dollar signs that are another deal, the more successful you're going to become. And I realize that sounds very cliche and everybody talks about, you know, the classic Zig Ziglar quote, you know, you'll get everything you want by just helping people get what they want. The older I get, and both of us are pretty young guys, but the older I get, the more experience I get under my belt, the more it just rings to be true to me.
Yeah. So we use the word impact in my companies. We like to impact those we work with. And I really like that word because it really kind of, that word means so much of, if you can impact somebody's life, you've done well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I love it, man. So what is the business? You know, you talked about hiring. What's your business looking like today? What's your primary business model? I know your primary market's in Phoenix, but you also operate in a couple other markets, right?
I do, yeah. You know, I'm transitioning. I'm going after semi-passive income. Have you ever heard of that word?
I have, but it's funny. You talk about passive income to 10 different people and you might get, you know, 50-50 as far as like how they define that. So I'd love to kind of, you know, what do you mean by semi-passive income? And you know, love to kind of pivot into that part of your business right now.
Yeah, yeah. So I'll kind of tell you what I'm doing and maybe talk about the semi-passive income for a second. So I flip here in Phoenix. I was doing 100 plus flips a year. And this market just got so competitive and it was taking so much of my time. And my wife was starting to kick and scream and yell at me. And our relationship was, you know, I'm doing this for you, honey. Right. And she's like, well, I didn't ask you to do this. You don't need to work that hard. It was just that kind of a conversation. Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we could do a whole podcast on how to keep your wife happy while you're working.
We could do a whole seminar on that. You kidding me?
Yeah. Days. And we probably would still get it wrong. Nonetheless, so I really decided to scale back my flipping here in Phoenix. I might only do 30 flips here in Phoenix this year, and I'm happy with that. So I'm going after deeper deals, trying not to work as hard here in Phoenix. And I opened up in some other markets, and we'll still do 100 flips this year. We don't do any wholesale. You know, we do five wholesales a year, but it's not our business. Mm-hmm. And we like to fix and flip. We like to get in there and do construction. And, you know, we concentrate on smaller markets, but more importantly, I try to find motivated individuals that have done at least 5 to 10 flips in their life by themselves. I don't care if they have a full-time job or not. And they're looking for somebody with capital. They're looking with somebody that they could, you know, hold their hand through the process and help them. And I go and I invest in them. I handle all the marketing. They're responsible for acquisitions. They're the boots on the ground. And we partner up, and that's worked really well. I've got a couple of those going and they're working great. And it's interesting because like my guy in Albuquerque, for example, I don't know if you met Cameron at our last deal.
No, I didn't. I didn't.
Yeah.
He was sitting next to you at dinner, right? I did meet Cameron.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So it's interesting that at first you said no. So he's kind of quiet. He's not the kind of guy that you think would be running a flipping company doing 60, 70 flips a year. If you met him, and you look at his disc profile, he just doesn't fit the mold. Mm-hmm. And I remember when we had our consultant come out to our office and he looked at Cameron and he's like, are you sure? After looking at his disc, you're like, are you sure you want to do this? Like, you don't fit this mold, you know? And he is so successful. And what sets him apart is his drive and work ethic overcome all the challenges he has outside of that.
It's great.
And so that he is an example of semi-passive income for me. I'm involved in his business, but he truly is responsible for running it. And then I make income off obviously the deals that he does.
So just to understand the structure, Ryan, is it his business or is it yours? And you're like, is it his business and you're acting as almost like a capital joint venture partner, or is it your business and you're employing him?
It's ours. We are partners, and that partnership split is not 50-50. It's just all, there's a lot of factors that go into that in every market, right?
Okay.
How much, if he's bringing money in, what he's providing, yada, yada. What the capital requirements are. I mean, those are dirty details, but right. we basically partner, but it is his business. He runs the business and okay. I help him make sure he's running it properly. So I help him hire, I help him develop his processes, but I don't do it for him. There's a big difference. I make sure that he has somebody to bounce ideas off of, and I'm constantly looking over his shoulder as kind of the big brother to be like, hey, let's move that compass a little bit and go this direction because so we don't go off course. And he loves it, right? Because I mean, he went from doing 5 deals a year with a full-time job to quitting his job, and he'll do 60 flips this year. Like, that's a huge swing you don't normally see. Like, people don't get the opportunity to swing that fast.
So Brian, let me ask you this. Let me kind of hit a pause on semi-passive income for a second, but I do want to circle back to this in a couple of minutes. I think it would be really valuable for people listening to, you know, I think the quality of our life can be directly impacted by the people that you associate with, you know? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so I'd love to just kind of get your thoughts in a couple of minutes. You know, you mentioned that you specifically looked for people that were successful flipping, whether it was part-time, full-time, but people that had some experience and had gone out and done it on their own. Were you strategic in a certain way as to how you went about and to find Cameron? Like, I'm kind of curious how you set out to look for these people to start creating semi-passive income and at the same time, you know, add value to these people's lives.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I just posted something on Facebook. Like, you know, it's just it. And I learned some things about Cameron that, and not everybody needs to match Cameron's mold, but one thing that I look for in people are people that are out there educating himself. I mean, that guy, in all honesty, I think he overeducated himself. And, you know, there's this great kind of quote that I like to think of. It's be diligent in your planning and be deliberate in your actions. He was very, very diligent in his planning. I mean, that guy did for 2 years straight, just listened to every single podcast, read every single book, and educating yourself is so important. But he was not deliberate in his actions. Do you see the difference? Like, he was so scared to make the move. But the fact that he was the kind of person to educate himself, because the opposite's not good either. People that are deliberate in their actions, but don't actually try to educate themselves and learn are dangerous.
Yeah.
So, you know, I try to find that person that really, really loves the business, is invested time in learning, and can talk the talk, but has never walked the walk or has done it a little bit, but has that fear. And it's funny, really briefly, a buddy of mine in our group brought up the fact, he's like, hey, have you ever looked at doing some of these big commercial deals? And I very openly, I think he was surprised by my answer. I was like, dude, it scares the crap out of me. Mm. And he's like, you're a rock star. What do you mean? Nothing scares you, right? And I think a lot of, it like hit me. This happened just yesterday. It hit me. Like, I think there's a lot of people probably listening that as these bigger commercial deals scare me, maybe getting into flipping and doing 10, 50 a year scares them. Scares
them, right.
And it's totally understandable. It should scare you. Like, it's really a lot of money. Like, you look at the operational costs, I'm running like $80,000 to $100,000 a month in operations. It's a lot of money that I have to cover that nut every month.
Yeah. Yeah. Got it. Okay. Perfect. No, I just wanted to kind of get your thoughts on that because obviously you've been super successful in, you know, creating these semi-passive income buckets by, I don't want to say leveraging other people because that sounds like you're using them, but you get what I'm saying. It's like you've identified people that can benefit from the experience and everything else you bring to the table and vice versa. And this allows you to, you know, essentially set up a couple different companies. I mean, how many businesses do you have now?
So good question. I'll answer that by saying it's not necessarily leveraging other people, although it truly is, but what it really is giving other people an opportunity to grow.
Yeah.
And I'm looking in my conference room. I can see Mitch right now. Mitch runs my cabinet company. He literally, it's his company. He runs it and I am an owner in it. And I treat it that way. When a decision needs to be made, that's really important. Mitch, what's the decision? Mm-hmm. And if he wants to ask me questions, I really give him the freedom to grow. But we are meeting, you know, a couple times a week, strategically planning. I'm helping him, you know, grow, do performance, just things that he's not used to doing. So I have the cabinet company. I own a real estate brokerage and I'm flipping in a few markets and I'm developing some software. And every company I do, I try to find somebody that I give them ownership. Let them run it, let them grow and make decisions. and I kind of benefit from, you know, the work we do together.
Yeah, man. So this is fascinating to me because just recently you went traveling with your family for 3 to 4 months. Is that right?
Well, last year was 3 months. This year I'm hoping to do 4 months. 120 days is my goal.
Okay. So, you know, somebody listening to this, I could totally see somebody listening to you and feeling completely overwhelmed in that, you know, here you are, you've successfully, you know, essentially, you know, you've set up multiple businesses in which obviously the key sounds like you found the right person to run the day-to-day operations and you're a partner, but you're not in the grind, right? How, what has enabled you to be able to forget focus on one successful business, but, you know, essentially succeed at multiple businesses that would give you the flexibility to travel 120 days a year with your family? Because, you know I talk to people all the time and I always try to tell people focus on one thing, you know, before you move on to something else. And yet you've, I don't know if I would say you've kind of bucked that trend, but obviously you have found something that has worked for you. So I want to find out your thoughts on what's enabled you to, like, was it systems? Was it hiring? Like, what are the key ingredients that has allowed you to set up your businesses so that they function without you and you could do what you enjoy doing, i.e. traveling with the family? And what's also your take, kind of a two-part question, what's the balance on focus versus being able to, you know, successfully do and create multiple streams of income?
It's all an exchange. All of life works like this. Almost everything you do in life for money is an exchange of time for money, right? And I'm willing to give up money to get more time. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if you call it luck, but I've been lucky in finding the right people. So going back to Mitch, where he was before we started, he was working for another cabinet company. They paid him, I'm just going to throw out a rough number, I think it was about $4,500 a month. And he literally ran the company. The owners were like non-existent. It was a very similar relationship that we have now with him. He ran the company, but he got paid a salary with no ownership. And he came to me and, you know, we sat down. He's like, dude, I'm going to quit. I'm thinking of starting my own thing. I'm kind of tired of being taken advantage of. And I said, hey, I'll fund you. I'll give you all this equity and you can run in. And I mean, he's making double what he was before. He's happy. I'm happy. Right. So when I started, I made a lot of the mistakes that his old boss made. I made the mistakes of trying to find what's the cheapest I could pay somebody and get the most out of them. Mm. That was how I approached it.
Yeah.
And I prided myself on negotiating really, really good deals. Like I wanted to be the best negotiator in the world. Yeah,
you
right?
wanted
and
to win in the negotiation.
Yeah. And I felt like winning was just getting the most out of somebody for the cheapest I could. And I've had so many bad experiences, just lawsuits and people quitting and, like, you know, somebody that you think loves you and is your best employee just not showing up the next day and quitting on you. And you're just like, what just happened? Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And having to step in and do their job when you weren't quite prepared to do that. And I've been through those painful nights of working 20-hour days to step in and fix things when people quit because, you know, you weren't treating them properly. Mm-hmm. And that's the honest truth. When I look back on it, I didn't pay people enough. I didn't treat them properly. I expected way more out of them than they had the capacity to do.
Yeah.
So that's really the answer. You asked me, you brought up focus. I think my focus is working with really good people that I pay well or that get paid well, whether I'm paying them or not through equity. At the end of the day, that get paid well. Mm-hmm. And that's my focus. It's less focusing on one business and more focusing on people.
Would you say that that's kind of like your, you know, Dan Sullivan from Strategic Coach has an exercise called your genius zone. You know, is that what you would kind of say, hey, this is my superpower? It's, you know, identifying talented people, figuring out how I can, you know, give them an opportunity, working with people like this. I mean, it seems like that's kind of been the key element in what, you know, has essentially allowed you to be able to travel and just kind of do the things that fuel you, I guess.
I would say that is what my goal is, as a superpower in the next year or two. You know, I don't think I'm there yet, Alex. It sounds like I am. And all of us that are flipping, you know, it's always, things always look better from the outside looking in than the inside looking out. I mean, the friend I was talking to yesterday, I won't mention his name, but he's talking about how great my business is, how great I am. And I'm not kidding. I'm thinking, this guy's way better than I'm doing. What is he, why is he telling me I'm great? Like, you just, everybody always feels that way. So yes, I think we're doing good. I'm hoping next year to be able to be great. Yeah. And I'm hiring a COO, and that's going to give me that extra month. And it's going to cost me $150,000 to hire this guy. It's not cheap.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that hire will give me that extra 30 days. Like, think about that. I'm trading. It'll give me some more time and some more flexibility to grow. And that's really the goal, is to expand this model of flipping into other states, right? Mm-hmm. It'll give me some more time to do that. So, but I'm also hoping it gives me an extra 30 days next year than I had last year.
Yeah. Yeah. Which man, you can't put a price on that. I mean, yeah, you're exchanging. I love what you said. You're essentially, you're willing to pay more money. You said this about 5-10 minutes ago. In a nutshell, you said, I'm willing to pay more money in exchange for time. And time is the one thing you can never get back. You know what I mean? So I wasn't planning on asking you this, but you know, I'm probably 6 to 9 months, maybe 6 to 12 months away from going in that same direction with looking for an integrator / COO. I'm kind of curious, you know, in a couple of minutes, what's that process been like for you? I mean, obviously it seems like one of your unique abilities is just connecting with the right people. Have you kind of gone about that process the same way, or what's that journey been like for you to find the COO?
It's been hard. I've been looking for 6 to 9 months, ironically. You should start now if you want to hire one in 6 to 9 months. Yeah. I've had guys that I'm excited about. I think they're excited, and then they just call me and they're like, I decided it's not worth it. And you know, everyone in my company thinks we're hiring them. I've had that happen to me twice. Uh-huh. And that's easy when it's, you know, an intern or an admin. It's hard when it's like your right hand guy, and you know, you're meeting everybody's excited about it, and then they back out. Had that happen a couple of times. I've had a couple of people that I've gotten far along with, and then I decided it wasn't a good fit.
Yeah.
So it's gone both ways, right? And you know, even the guy now that I'm 95% going to hire, here is the best advice I was given with regards to hiring high level people. Come in, you can interview me for 2 hours. And if you need more time, let me know. You know, the time is less important to me.
Well, your job. Where they're interviewing you, or you're interviewing them?
No, nope, okay. They're interviewing me.
Okay.
You get to come in my office. You get to interview me for 2 hours, ask any and every question you can. Now, I had them read traction before they came in, so they got a good idea of how we run things. Mm-hmm. So ask anything and everything you think you need to know about this position and about our company and about what your role and how you would benefit and what pains and struggles we're having, basically, right? I'm not going to give you solutions. I'm not going to tell you how we're going to solve those things. I'm going to tell you, here are the pains, here are the struggles, as you ask, and get into the details of how our business processes work. Come back the next week and you put on a presentation and show me how you're going to solve those problems.
I love
how you're integrating into our business. And it's been a really cool process. So this guy's supposed to be presenting to me next week, and I'm really excited about it. He's done, it's taken like 6 hours of interview time because he has to interview each business, but he's going to integrate into all of them and help me run all of them. But it is such a cool process. It's such a cool way because I get to see how he thinks, what kind of questions is he asking, what kind of solutions he come up. And I truly don't care if he gets it perfect or not, but I want to see how he's thinking about it.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. I love that, man. I love that. Well, hey, I know you got a break here in about 5 minutes or so. You got an event going on in your office, so I want to be respectful of your time. This is something I always ask, and I'm always kind of, as you probably know, like, because you and I didn't, we kind of talked about the direction we were going to take the show in, but I never, whenever, just for you guys listening, whenever I interview someone, I never tell them what questions I'm going to ask them, because, you know, I just want to keep this casual and I want like the raw answers. I want to try to add as much value to you listening and taking the time. And I'm always kind of fascinated by what people are going to say with this last question. But, you know, you're a young dude, man. Rewind the clock 10, 15 years, knowing what you know now. What's the one piece of advice you would share with your younger self? And this doesn't even have to be about business, Ryan. It could be about life. It could be about relationships. It could be about health. But if you had to kind of narrow it down to one thing that, again, knowing what you know now, you think would move the needle the most in your life, what would that be?
So my goal in answering this is to help your listeners. Like, I really feel like you did a good job of getting me talking about myself, which I normally don't like doing. And I feel like I haven't been able to provide value to your listeners yet. So I want to answer this in a way that will help. It'll answer your question, but I really want to give you some good value to your listeners. If you're married, first of all, marry well. I don't know how better to say that. If you're not married, like, it is so important that your wife or spouse or husband, if you're, mm-hmm. you know, whatever, that your spouse understands the business you're in. If you're going to be flipping or wholesaling, that you're going to be taking calls late at night, that you're going to have to leave early sometimes, that, yeah, you might be able to come home at 3 o'clock because you don't have anything going on, come home early, but you might be on the phone from 6 to 8 taking calls. And so it really, really important that you have open and honest conversations with your spouse. And that is something that I wish I would have done better at the beginning. Right.
Yeah.
And somebody would have told me how much work this really is sometimes. And, you know, we talk about all the freedom I have and the 120 day of vacation. Well, I'm also, when I'm working, I'm at job sites at 4:35 AM sometimes. And I wake up in the middle of the night and work 2 or 3 hours sometimes. Like, I still work hard.
Yeah.
Right. So that is really important, is understand. And then one more thing on your spouse, and I want to give another set of advice. And I'm going to talk about this probably in my presentation in March or April, whenever that is, but sit down with your spouse twice a year. We do ours end of December or January 1st. And then we also do it in June or July, and set what you want your life to look like.
Yes.
So we talk about it. What do you think our life should, what is your perfect life over the next 6 months to a year? Well, I want to be able to buy clothes for the kids and spend $500 a month on the kids on clothes, because that's important to me. Or I want to be able to play tennis for, I want to be able to, like, just don't talk about money. Right? Like, talk about what you want your life to look like. I really want to get us a nicer house with another bedroom. That's important to me, whatever. Right. And then back that off and say, how much money do we need to be making to fulfill that life? And what that process does is it helps you maybe, I don't know the right word here, Alex, I'm being put on the spot thinking about this, but it really helps you put into perspective what's important, and it helps you put into perspective that you don't have to make $1 million to be happy. That if you guys talked about your perfect life, and shit, it might be a Lamborghini, right? That you might say that. I don't, who knows what somebody's perfect life is, but for that next year. But just do that process, and then you might say, you know, we could, making $8,000 a month, we're happy. I don't know why I'm working so many hours to try to make 20.
So, right, so, man, I can't think of a better way to wrap up the show. I think you absolutely hit the nail on the head. I'm a part of the Life and Air Mastermind, and I don't know if you're even familiar with Life and Air you just basically summarize it. It's about having a vision for your life, and, you know, and then creating a business that's going to support that lifestyle. And I've been through this exercise several times, and I'm here to tell you that based on my experience and many of the people I've spoken to, your desired lifestyle is significantly cheaper than what you probably think it's going to be. If you just put a dollar behind, okay, here's my perfect life, here's what I want it to look like, and then you figure out what that life costs you on a monthly basis, my guess is for most of you, it's going to be a lot less than what you think it might be. And then you can design a business that's going to support that lifestyle. You know what I mean? So I love the fact that you said that, you know, so your advice on, by the way, I think you totally sold yourself short. There's so many valuable nuggets that you dropped that I think can really, really help a lot of people, man. So I appreciate the time, but your advice on, you know, communicating with your spouse is huge, because, you know, when things are just not right, in your household, it's a ripple effect on every other part of your life. It really is. And vice versa. And then I love what you just said about just, you know, having a vision and just getting on the same page with the people, your loved ones, the people that matter most to you. So, Ryan, I appreciate you, man. I know
let me end with one more thing. I know you're doing your best to try to end at 11 at the 20 mark. I appreciate it. I just want to add one more value, if that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry to interrupt you, Alex. I know you're trying to end your show, and this is really, really, really important. It's something like, I probably should have started with this, although the life stuff is probably more important. Every single time you buy a house, you need to analyze it. Does it make more sense to wholesale it? Does it make more sense to flip it? Or does it make more sense to rent it? And that third one is the biggest mistake I made over time. The very first house I bought was for $11,000, and it rented out for $800 a month.
Oh, you sold it.
I flipped it.
Oh.
And like, it just like looking back on that, it pains me inside.
Yes. Yes.
And if you set your return, and how I set my returns is I look at my cost of capital. If my cost of capital, like it used to be 15%, probably pretty standard out there for most people. If your cost of capital is 15%, you should get a rental return more than 15%. Mm-hmm. If your rental return is more than 50% on the house, you should keep the house, because yeah. you could borrow against it and buy other houses and then pay it off, and you still have that house forever, making 16, 17, 18, 19, 20%. So yeah. that is like, it's so freaking important that every single house you buy, run your rental rate return. And you looking back, you might look back and say, crap, there were 20, 25, 30% returns. I could have kept those houses instead of flipping them.
Last thing I'll mention along those lines, Ryan, I look back even 3, 4, 5 years ago, and there's probably 10 to 20 properties that I look at, and I kick myself in the ass for wholesaling that deal instead of taking it down as a rental. So 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. So I mean, I've got about 30 to 40,000 a month in just pure passive income from buying those kind of houses. And I it could be more if I would have kept more, but that is like, we do that on every house now. And we probably add 20 to 30 houses a year just from doing that.
Yeah. Amazing, brother. Hey man, I know I talked about the YouTube show at the top. If you want to plug that link, I'd like to get people connected into, you know, how they can reach you and how they can learn more about, you know, some of the stuff that you're putting out there.
Awesome. I will do that. And Alex, thanks for having me on. I'd love to come back when we get our software up and running here in the next 3 or 4 months, and we'll talk more about that. But thanks for taking the time to let me share some stuff with you.
Yep, absolutely, guys. And we'll put that link in the show notes page. And, you know, I appreciate you guys taking the time. Ryan, I appreciate you, buddy. I know I'll see you in about a month or so. And yeah, guys, I look forward to connecting with you on the next one.
That's all for this episode of the Flip Empire Show. But we have you covered with even more expertise and resources on our website. Text EMPIRE to 67076 or head over to flipempire.com to join the newsletter and gain free instant access to our video module training course called 5 Ways to Scale Your Real Estate Wholesaling Business to 6 figures in 6 months or less. For more interviews, strategies, and insights for the smart real estate investor, we'll catch you next time here on the Flip Empire Show.